Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
You are now listening to the Calcio Corner Podcast with your host, Raffaele.
What's good? This is indeed the Calcio Corner Podcast, where we cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the 61st episode of the Calcio Corner Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom, just about anywhere you can get your podcasts. Be sure to give me a follow on Twitter. My account is at ItalianoCalcio. Check the link in my Twitter bio for all the links you need to help support and listen to my podcast. As I've been mentioning, and as you've been seeing on Twitter, if you follow me, I give a minimum of three betting tips each round in Serie A. So I just had my first round, obviously, those three betting tips hit two out of the three. So if you followed all three of them, you would have been profitable. So definitely feel free to jump on board. It costs $3 a month to be a patron. And again, each and every round, I will be providing you with at least those three minimum betting tips for each round. Definitely, you know, bet responsibly, as I always urge my patrons, you know, only follow the bets that I provide that you also feel comfortable with. But hopefully, you know, I'll be able to use my knowledge of Serie A, my knowledge of sports betting and analytics and stuff like that to try to provide the best tips each and every round. And hopefully over the course of a 38-round season, if you will, I can make my patrons profitable. So definitely check that out. The link to that is in my Twitter bio as well. And we will start off this 61st episode of the podcast by looking back at the round, opening round of Serie A, round one that just concluded today on Monday as I'm recording this podcast. And as we will use all season long, we will look at the good and the bad from each round in the league. So we'll start with the good. Always good to start with the positive, right? Overall, one good was just the whole round as a whole. It was just super entertaining, goals galore, a lot of interesting games, even games that didn't necessarily look like on paper as really great matchups. For example, that game on Sunday between Salernitana and Bologna, on paper that didn't seem like this great game, but it was actually turned out to be a 3-2 thriller. Looked like Salernitana were going to maybe pull the upset over Bologna, but Bologna got that win at home. Just really great games. A lot of end-to-end action. Even the game on Monday between Cagliari and Spezia, they played out to a 2-2 draw. That was a highly entertaining game. So, I mean, that's just what makes this league so great and so amazing, that even the less sexy marquee matchups, if you will, as I said, you know, they still could provide unbelievable games and a lot of entertainment. You don't have to necessarily just watch the big teams play, or, you know, when we get a Rome derby, a Derby d'Italia, whatever the case may be. It's not just those big, you know, high-quality, big marquee games that provide entertainment. It's any game in any week, any round, any game on any day in Serie A can certainly provide entertainment. So one good was certainly just the whole entire round. It was a great way to kick off a new season with a lot of excitement and a lot of intrigue. Diving a little deeper into this round, certainly one of the goods was Inter's 4-0 win over Genoa. There was certainly a lot of question marks coming into this season, and not that Inter have answered all those questions, you know, in round one just by beating Genoa 4-0, but it certainly gave, you know, Inter fans reason to be optimistic and still believe in this season. As you've heard me say on my podcast on the last couple episodes, I think there's a lot of overreaction to what happened to Inter this summer, losing Lukaku, Hakimi, and Conte. And again, just because they won this game does not mean they're the Scudetto favorites or anything like that, but they played really well. Edin Dzeko got a goal in his, you know, first official debut. Çalhanoğlu did as well. So, you know, big goals for these key additions to this team. They got a lot of pressure, right? Çalhanoğlu's replacing Eriksen, who's obviously out due to his health concerns that happened during the Euro this summer. Dzeko was replacing Lukaku, who was arguably the best striker in Italy this past season and perhaps over the past two seasons. Dzeko is no slouch of a striker himself. I've said it. I think he could score 15 to 20 goals on this Inter team with that talent around him. And again, outside of Lukaku and Hakimi, and I know that Conte is a big loss. I say it all the time how much I do value coaches and how impactful I think they could be. They still have so many other players. I mean, Barella had himself a great game. They still have that defense intact. Lautaro Martinez is still there. There's no slouch of or no lack of talent on this team. Again, they lost critical players, but they still have so much more. And I thought they brought in pretty good replacements. Dumfries got to come on in the second half and make his Inter debut. So that was certainly one of the goods. You know, Simone Inzaghi, a lot of pressure on him. Perhaps no coach this season has more pressure on him than Inzaghi, and he was able to answer the call in this 4-0 win. You know, Genoa, look, make of it what you will. Last season, before Ballardini took over, this team was floundering and heading towards relegation. I didn't think they'd be competing in Serie A this season. They should have been relegated to Serie B. Ballardini took over and absolutely worked his magic and really turned things around and resurrected this club. They had some outstanding results and wins last season under Ballardini. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what type of team this is now. But, you know, the way they closed out last season, they were a pretty good team, a pretty solid side. So Inter 4-0 win, a 4-0 win, certainly a good from this weekend. Another good, Lazio, right? Maurizio Sarri getting a win in his debut. His team fell behind to Empoli pretty early on, 1-0. And you were just wondering, oh boy, you know, what does this entail? What could this, you know, could this be an upset game in the making for Maurizio Sarri and Lazio? But Lazio were able to answer back. Milinkovic-Savic had himself a good game. Ciro Immobile provided a goal via the penalty spot. All in all, a pretty good game from Lazio. And you expect this team to grow. It'll certainly take some time to fully grasp and fully be able to implement and execute Maurizio Sarri's tactics and his mentality and his philosophy of how he wants his team to play. You saw under Maurizio Sarri and Napoli, each season the team kind of progressed a bit and had a better understanding to play that Sarri ball, if you will. So good start for Lazio, good start for Maurizio Sarri. There's a lot of good debuts for certain coaches in big spots. Another one was certainly Napoli winning 2-0 over Venezia. So Spalletti gets a win in his first game in charge with Napoli. It did not go really well. It wasn't necessarily the smooth 2-0 win, if you will, for Napoli. But it was certainly a good result for them. They went down a man, Victor Osimhen. That was a bad call, in my opinion. I think at most that should have been a yellow card, what he did. And if you haven't seen it, during a corner kick, he kind of puts his hand out. He does, I think, make contact with the player's face. And it's certainly an aggressive shove, but to be a straight red, I thought that was pretty harsh. There was a lot of red cards given out across Serie A in round one. But and then he also got, I think, a 2 or 3 game suspension, Osimhen. So that's really rough on top of the red card. I think it's way over the top. I'm sure Napoli will appeal it. But all in all, Napoli getting a 2-0 win. They had to beat Venezia. There was no other option. Going down a man, playing down a man pretty much for the most of the game, I thought Napoli still played well, and it did not really cause him to play scared or really drop back or anything. Lorenzo Insigne, he missed the penalty early on, and you could have think in that moment it could have just really crept in his mind. The contract situation weighing on his mind, a lot of doubt of his future. Is it going to be with his beloved Napoli or not? Shortly after that penalty miss, Napoli get another penalty. There was never any doubt in my mind who would take it. It was going to be Insigne again. He converted it. So he kind of, you know, was able to redeem himself. So that was good for Lorenzo Insigne. Some more good. I thought Roma were outstanding against Fiorentina. Another game that saw two red cards, as I said, many games did. Mourinho gets a win in his debut, upstaging Vincenzo Italiano in his Fiorentina debut. But just a really good game. Tammy Abraham was certainly one of the goods from this weekend. He caused Fiorentina's goalie Drakowski to get a red card early on to put Fiorentina down a man. So he made that critical impact. He also assisted Roma's first two goals. So he had a really good debut for the Giallorossi. And there's just a lot of hype and a lot of buzz around him and this Roma team. And I certainly think, you know, this is a Roma side that could, you know, sneak into that top four and get back into the Champions League next season, which is obviously what they want to get to, what Mourinho wants, what their owners, the Friedkins, want, what the fan base wants. So I'm really interested to see how Tammy Abraham, you know, continues to make an impact for this team and how much, you know, impact Mourinho is going to make on this team. Again, as I said with Inter, and as I would continue to say and urge, it's only one game, no need to overreact. And we can't extrapolate out an entire 38-game season from just one game. But certainly you like what you saw from Roma, from Tammy Abraham. Plenty of reason to be optimistic there. I thought another good was Milan. You know, they played a pretty good game against Sampdoria. Sampdoria certainly created some chances and put pressure on Milan, but Mike Maignan, a player that has a lot of pressure on him, replacing Donnarumma, certainly had himself a really good game. He made some great saves. You know, keeping a clean sheet for him, I think, was very important and could give him a lot of confidence going forward, as well as his defenders. So that was certainly another good from this weekend. Brahim Diaz wearing that number 10 shirt, his first game wearing that number 10 shirt for Milan. He scored an early goal. Olivier Giroud started in this game. Obviously, Zlatan Ibrahimovic is out injured. Giroud created some chances. I thought Calabria had a nice game for Milan. So really good job by Milan. Remember, this is one of the few teams among the top teams in Italy that have their coach returning with Stefano Pioli. Just like Atalanta has Gasperini back, so you wonder what kind of advantage that gives them over a team like Napoli with a new coach, Lazio with a new coach, Roma with a new coach. I know Allegri has been a former Juve coach, and he knows the club and organization, and a lot of those players he's coached before. I shouldn't say a lot, but several of those players he's coached before. But again, some of those other top teams that are going to be vying for those top four spots, a lot of new coaches in place. Pioli has returned to Milan. Gasperini returned to Atalanta. You wonder what kind of edge that gives them, but Milan beating a good, solid Sampdoria side, 1-0. I thought that was certainly good. Again, Maignan had himself a great game. Keeping that clean sheet, I think, was super important for Maignan in his Milan debut in terms of in Serie A. But that was mostly the good. Again, I mentioned the Bologna-Salernitana game in terms of an entertainment factor in this Cagliari-Spezia game. Those are two of the more entertaining games, in my opinion, despite, you know, again, not having those big marquee games and big marquee teams and matchups and whatnot, but certainly plenty of excitement from those games. Lots and lots of good. On to the bad from this week. You got to start with Juventus's 2-2 draw against Udinese. They got out to such a fast start. Again, it all kind of started with that intrigue of Cristiano Ronaldo being on the bench and, you know, the rumors flying that he would, you know, didn't want to play. He wants to see out this final week of the transfer mercato and see if maybe there could be an alternative club that will come and buy him and he could go elsewhere. But then, you know, before the game even kicked off, Nedved and the club came out and said that, you know, Ronaldo's not going anywhere. He wants to stay. They want him to stay. So you wonder why he did not start that game. But I'll say this before I dive more into this Juve game. I thought it was good to see Ronaldo on the sideline during cooling breaks and during halftime when the players were on the field warming up, getting ready for the second half. He was doing a lot of coaching. Not saying we haven't seen him do that in his career, but I think Ronaldo often gets labeled and characterized as this, you know, bad teammate or someone who's very egocentric. You know, which is very opposite of Messi, but you know, you could be egocentric, which I don't think anyone could deny that Ronaldo is, but you could still be a good teammate. I've never really felt that he was a bad teammate, but it was good to see him coaching up and giving some advice to some of those Juve teammates of his, because, you know, love him or hate him, Cristiano Ronaldo is obviously one of the greatest players. He's a genius when it comes to the sport and what he does, and he knows so many ways to attack a defense and little tricks and trades and crafts that have helped him become one of the greatest to ever play. So it was nice to see him passing on that knowledge to his Juve teammates during those cooling breaks when the players were able to come to the sideline and right before the second half kicked off. So that was good. But again, Juve collapsing. They got off to that 2-0 start. Dybala was the captain, right? It's the return of Dybala. He's healthy. Allegri's back in charge. We figured to see a much more involved Dybala and a Dybala that certainly could contribute a lot this season. Third minute, he scores a goal. You're thinking all is going to be great for Juventus, even without Ronaldo. This is going to be Dybala's time to shine. Cuadrado provided a goal, you know, 20 minutes later or so. 2-0 lead into halftime. You're thinking this is all great. Udinese really don't have that firepower to come back in the second half. But Juventus just absolutely collapsed in the second half and really got nothing going offensively. I think they maybe created one shot on goal in the whole second half. So really, just a poor effort. I know Chesney made that woeful mistake that helped Udinese get back into this game, but you can't pin it all on Chesney. You know, just collectively as a team, as I said, not really getting it done in that second half, putting pressure on that Udinese team, putting pressure on Silvestri, Udinese's new goalie. So just a bad job by Juve. Now, Ronaldo did come on in the second half and you know, deep into stoppage time, he scored what looked like to be the game winner on a header, but ultimately, after a little bit of a delay, VAR ruled that he was offside, so it looked like Ronaldo was coming on in that second half and going to be that savior for Juventus, but instead they dropped points right out the gate, which is obviously not how Allegri wanted his return to start with Juventus, especially when you consider Inter won, Napoli won, Lazio won, Atalanta won, Milan. I know at that time the Juve game was over, Milan still had to play the next day, but Milan wins. So, you know, all the big teams that Juventus are going to be battling with for the Scudetto, they were able to be victorious. They got their 3 points. Juventus came up short, having to settle for one. Just like I said, though, with Inter, you can't extrapolate out the whole season based on one round. But this is why I get it that Juventus are the betting favorites to win the Scudetto, at least coming into the season. But, I wouldn't be so quick to anoint them that just because Inter lost those key pieces over the summer. This is why I've been saying don't overreact if you're an Inter fan, or, don't give up hope if you're an Atalanta fan, or any of these other teams that you think could be fighting for a Scudetto. I wouldn't say it's signed, sealed, and delivered that Juventus will win it just because Allegri, returned and whatnot. I know you got Chiesa, who's more confident. I love the Locatelli signing. Dybala, if he stays healthy and plays well, he'll certainly be a key cog in this team. But let's just say, what if Ronaldo does leave last minute in the Mercato? How does that really, change things for Juventus? It's going to be hard to replace a player that, gives you 30 goals and provides, just that game-changing ability that he brings. So I wouldn't be so quick to anoint Juventus the Scudetto, but at the same time, just because they collapsed and drew 2-2 to get against Udinese to kick off their season, I wouldn't be, jumping off the bandwagon just yet. We can't overreact just yet, but again, I still have my mixed feelings about Juventus, whether they could really make that jump from a team that barely made the Champions League last year to being a Scudetto winning team. Not saying they can't do it, not saying they will or won't. I just want to see a little bit more from this team, and I also want to see how this Ronaldo saga certainly plays out. Another bad I felt from this weekend was Zaniolo getting sent off. He had a yellow card from the first half right before halftime. Then he, pretty early on in that second half, got that second yellow card and got sent off with the red, obviously. He made it a 10v10 because Fiorentina were already down a man. Roma ended up winning, so it did not cost Roma anything, but Zaniolo is one of those players that we're so excited to see this season, right? He's pretty much missed the last 2 years with injuries and critical injuries and crucial injuries. And we're all so excited to see what he could do. He had some pretty good highlight reels in preseason and looked pretty good in training games and whatnot. We're excited to see what he could do under Mourinho, what he's going to do with Tammy Abraham and the other weapons that Roma have acquired up front. And here he is getting sent off, early on in the second half and depriving us of seeing a full game with Zaniolo. I'm sure he would have got subbed off, but just not what you want to see from Zaniolo. You certainly want to see him keep his composure and do what he has to do. He took to Instagram to apologize to the Roma fans and his teammates for getting sent off. But we want to see Zaniolo play as much as we possibly can, right? Like I said, we've been deprived of not seeing him play really for almost 2 seasons. So all of us want to see him play, not just Roma fans, but just Serie A fans in general, because he certainly is one of the best young players in the game, one of the bright young players in Serie A that we want to see play. So it was just, something I wanted to point out as another bad. But in general, one final bad I wanted to talk about was the red cards and the refereeing. I mean, 7 red cards in round one, that has to be one of the highest red carded rounds I could ever remember. Some of them were questionable, some certainly justifiable. But again, I mentioned that Osimhen one, that was, in my opinion, way over dramatic to give a red card. It was just that Bologna-Salernitana game had 3 red cards between those two teams. It was just, it just seemed like every minute, even the yellow cards were coming out. I don't know if the refs are trying to crack down on things early and establish that, we're not going to tolerate certain challenges and certain things being said and whatnot, and certain dissent being shown throughout this entire season. And we're going to try to, crack down on it early. And then as we see the season go on, they get a little bit more lenient. We could see something like that. So maybe it's just a case of that. At least I'm hoping that is, because I do not want to see games being plagued each and every round with a boatload of red cards. And, it certainly changes the balance of a game. I know, as I said, Napoli were able to overcome being down a man and beating Venezia, but that's because it was such an inferior side. Bologna, despite having, 2 red cards to Salernitana's 1, they managed to pull off the victory. Roma, Fiorentina, they were leveled on red cards, both going down a team. Verona, they went down a man against Sassuolo, and they ended up losing that game. So it certainly, tilts the favor to the team that has the man advantage. That goes without saying, but we don't want to see this become an epidemic in Serie A this season with just red cards galore. So that was just my final bad from this round. I think way too many red and yellow cards being shown. And again, hopefully it's just the refs trying to establish control and set the tempo and precedent for what they will tolerate and won't tolerate as the season goes on. And they're just going to be a little harsh to start off to kind of establish that. All right, so I wanted to just wrap up this episode by just talking about some of the latest little transfer news that's kind of been breaking as I'm recording this. And one of those big stories is Torino's Belotti is being linked to Inter. We know Inter have been looking to add another attacker, another striker. It's been Joaquin Correa of Lazio. It's been Marcus Thuram of Borussia Mönchengladbach. It's been Lorenzo Insigne of Napoli. Now the latest one seems to be Andrea Belotti. We know Belotti has that new contract offer from Torino sitting there on the table ready for him to sign, but he has not signed it yet. I'm sure he has been holding out for exactly this, potentially, you know, big club to swoop in and try to sign him, because I'm sure in some ways he would love to leave Torino, play for a club that has, you know, a more competitive side that could compete for trophies, whether it's Champions League, Scudetto, Coppa Italia, whatever the case may be. So that's maybe, you know, again, Inter have been linked to so many strikers, so until they actually nail one down, you know, I don't know if that's going to be the case, but Belotti is the latest name they're being linked to. I'll be honest with you, in some ways, I wonder if Inter are the right team for Belotti. I know I've been advocating that he needs to leave to help grow his career and blossom and maybe make that next jump, and he deserves to be on a team that could compete for trophies, but I wonder if Inter is that right team, because, again, you have Dzeko there now. Not saying he can't play over Dzeko, but Dzeko's there. Lautaro Martinez is there. Certainly, again, they're competing in three competitions. They're hoping to make a deeper run in the Champions League than they did last season. They certainly would love to win the Coppa Italia. They're going to try to win the Scudetto, obviously. So there will be certainly, you know, plenty of game opportunity and minutes to go around. And with Dzeko being older, I'm sure they'll give him some rest. And not that Dzeko is necessarily a long-term solution at Inter, obviously. But I just wonder if Belotti, you know, in a perfect world, would love to join a top club where he would be the guaranteed clear starter, starting striker, which, again, I don't know that he will be that at Inter this season. Maybe next season, if they move on from Dzeko, he would be. But not saying it's a bad option for him. He certainly would provide a more depth and certainly another weapon for Inzaghi to deploy on his team. And he certainly will help make Inter a better team, no doubt about it. And I think he could handle that pressure, handle that jump, handle competing in all these competitions and playing in more meaningful games, and, you know, knowing that you're getting the opposition's absolute best because you're Inter and they want to beat you and stick it to you and maybe even play a more defensive model against you and defensive strategy against you that you really have to break down. But I just wonder if that necessarily is the best move for Belotti. And then the other one is Domenico Berardi. He's being linked to Fiorentina. I'm sure Vincenzo Italiano, who's just this, you know, genius mind and genius at football, and his way different philosophies of all players on his field or playmakers and can handle the ball and everything. And we saw what he was able to do with Spezia last season. I think Berardi would be a great addition for Fiorentina to be coached by a guy like Italiano. Now Dionisi, the new Sassuolo coach who came over from Empoli, he's a very good progressive mind in the world of football. And his tactics certainly would suit an offensive player like Berardi. So I'm not saying he's at a bad position where he is right now with Sassuolo and who he's being coached by, but I think Fiorentina would be a nice club for him to join. This, you know, if they don't sell Vlahovic, you know, he'd be a nice player for him to team up with in attack. Now, certainly Berardi could be insurance in case a big offer comes for Dusan Vlahovic, which we know many teams from Atletico to Tottenham and other teams that are interested in him. It could be a crazy end to the Mercato this upcoming week. So we'll certainly have to see how that plays out. But I really like that link for Berardi. You know, he's been comfortable at Sassuolo. He really hasn't pushed to leave. You know, I've wondered if he really has any desire to go play at a big club, if that even interests him, or is he going to be, you know, Antonio Di Natale 2.0, who's just content with playing at a club of like Udinese's level or Sassuolo's level and having himself a nice career by all accounts and being a member of the Italian national team, but doesn't necessarily have that desire or drive to be on that big club that could compete for trophies. He's happy playing for Sassuolo, but I think Fiorentina would be a nice step up. I mean, you got to give Comiso's credit. He's trying his best. He's locking up certain players like Milinkovic. He signed the defender to a new long-term contract. He scored against Roma, the lone goal for Fiorentina in their loss. But, you know, he's trying to keep his players to the best of his ability. He certainly didn't want to give up Chiesa last summer, but he couldn't do anything to convince Chiesa. He's trying to lock down Vlahovic. He's trying to bring in Berardi. So he's certainly trying to do the best he can to put together a competitive team and one that could compete, you know, for a spot in Europe, whether it's Europa League or ultimately, ideally for them, the Champions League. And that's a fan base influence that certainly deserves it. So I like the Berardi link to Fiorentina. I'm not saying I don't like the Belotti link to Inter. I just wonder, I mean, Belotti might not have many options at this point, but I'm sure he would have loved, you know, he was linked at 1.2 Roma early in the summer. Obviously, they're not going to pursue him. They already got Tammy Abraham, but if he had joined Roma, he would have been the clear starting striker for Roma under Mourinho. Like, that to me would have been a great fit for him, right? Where he is the clear number one striker for his team, like he is at Torino, at Inter. He's certainly going to be in a bit of a rotation with Dzeko. He could play in Lautaro's role, and you could give Lautaro the day off, and it could be Belotti and Dzeko teaming up together. So there's certainly, again, plenty of minutes to go around for Inter this season with all their competitions. Two rotate players, and Dzeko being older, I'm sure Inzaghi would like to keep him as fresh as possible, but you certainly want to keep him out there. He scored that goal in his debut against Genoa, as I mentioned. So, you know, again, not a bad fit, Inter, for Belotti, but it's probably not the best fit for him in terms of, you know, getting as many minutes on the field as possible. But we'll see what happens, whether that actually comes to fruition and whether or not Berardi joins Fiorentina. But those are the latest Mercato rumors. So that will do it for the 61st episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. Once again, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That'd be greatly appreciated to help us grow our content. Feel free to spread the word of the Calcio Corner podcast to any friends or family members that you think may enjoy a Calcio-centric podcast. If you're interested in those Serie A betting tips each and every round, be sure to join and sign up and become a patron. That link is in my Twitter bio. And until next time, guys, ciao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.